It's time to get brutally honest.
I'm ecstatic that he's still in the league.
Because you've got a foil.
I truly cherish watching him throw interceptions every Sunday.
Because of the reaction.
Never his fault, and then he goes right back to the bench and sits there as if he's in Central Park on a Sunday afternoon.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
The rare point. Mullen getting a rare point. Gord yes. Miller's in here.
The Stones.
I'm a big Stones fan.
Did you fail grade 11 for them?
I didn't. Well, actually, I probably might have.
I did.
Like the whole grade?
The first half of the year.
So what happened?
Well, so here's the thing. Rolling Stone magazine, which you'd think would know, said that the Tattoo U tour in 1981 was going to be the Stones' last tour. So
they've been doing that for 40 years.
I know.
This is our last
tour. So my
tour.
Buddy Mark Firstino, his older brother, went to the University of Colorado in Boulder, and the Stones were playing down there. So we climbed into Mark's Datsun B210, five of us, and drove from Edmonton to Boulder to see the Stones during our midterms. Because it was our last chance to see the Stones.
They were never going to play again.
They were never going to play again. This was it.
An exam is right around the corner. You can write another exam in 3 months.
Tattoo U was it.
Right.
So, a bunch of things went sideways with that. The Datsun was not up to the trip. We made it. We sat. I want you to picture, I'm trying to picture a football stadium. Oh, let's take New Era Stadium in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? NFL Stadium. Pick the last section of the upper deck, go like five rows from the top, and then put the stage at the other end. That's where we were.
It's still the Stones, though. You're in the building, right? It's worthy of a story.
Do you know how many times I've seen them since?
How many?
I'm going to say 12.
Yeah, I've seen them, I think, 3 times.
Yeah.
Now, nowhere close to their prime, clearly. Now, even by 81, that's not their prime.
No. But they're still pretty good then.
They're still really good. Now, Ronnie Wood would have been in the band at that point.
Yeah.
You still had Bill Wyman was still kicking around.
Yeah. If you're seeing the Stones now without Bill Wyman, it's not really the Stones.
Well, Charlie Watts doesn't play anymore either.
No.
I'm pretty sure Charlie just said, I'm out. I'm not playing the drums anymore.
So that was kind of, so I love the Stones, but that was a poor decision. I've not, by the way, informed my daughter of this decision that I made yet. I haven't told her about that.
So what would happen if she decides to do something very similar? Is she in grade 11 right now?
No, she's going into grade 8.
Okay, so in 3 years, let's say Taylor Swift is retiring. That's it. And she jumps into a van and she's going to Madison Square Garden. She's going to drive 8-9 hours to New York, miss out on midterms. Who are you to say that she can't do that? What are you going to say to her?
I don't know. She's so responsible, though, that she would never do something like that.
Yeah, okay. I don't know, Gord. We both love the Stones, though. I'm happy that they...
Yeah.
Mullen bringing the heat out of the gate.
Yeah.
Good way to start an afternoon.
Yeah, like the Stones. Now, I got to say, it would have been nice if they'd hung it up 20 years ago.
That's the thing. Like, I saw them at Sarstock, which didn't really count because it was so late into the afternoon. Were you at that? Were you at Downsview Park?
No, I was not there.
So, you know the story, 500,000 people.
Yeah.
I probably got there around noon. They got on stage at like 10:30. I was done. By the time they got up, I wasn't interested in being there anymore. Saw them in Halifax, which was a really cool show.
Yeah.
Would have been around 05 or 06. And then I think I saw them in Toronto another time. I can't remember.
I saw them in Winnipeg and actually ended up seeing Charlie Watts at breakfast. And I said, I'm a huge fan. He says, I didn't know I had any fans. I said, well, my mom's favorite Beatle was George, so... There you go. So,
love the Stones. I'd rather they don't tour anymore because it's not... Like, Keith doesn't even plug the guitar in anymore. Mick is still trying to act like he can do his thing, but it's kind of depressing to watch.
There's an expiry date, right? Like, so Green Day is going in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it's 25 years since they released their first album.
Okay. I'm a fan. But I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan.
They're still relevant. Green Day's still, right?
I guess, but when was the last time they had a big hit or put an album out?
But
I have no idea.
But their message, it's hard to be the Stones and be the outsiders and the bad boys when you're grandparents.
Yeah, but it's like, Mick is a parent again. Like 2 months ago, he just had another kid.
I know, he's unbelievable, huh?
This guy doesn't stop.
He literally doesn't stop.
No.
Like he.
You need to stop, Mick. Please. Actually, what do I care? Do whatever you want.
He's Mick.
He's Mick. He can get away with it. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Stones. Now, seeing the Stones in the 60s, that would have been something. Or the early 70s.
Yeah. They were hopping early 70s.
Yeah. That's when they were at their absolute, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you go see him around 72, 73 after.
See, I was 7 years old then.
Yeah. See, I wasn't even kicking by that point. Clearly. Anyway, Gordon, it's good to have you in here.
Yeah,
buddy.
It's nice to be back with that little age shot again.
It's great to have you here.
It took you like 10 minutes last week, last time I was on.
I understand you've been a busy guy. You were golfing yesterday.
Played golf.
Saw the O-Dog.
Yeah, saw the O-Dog. A great tournament yesterday up at Summit about a difficult subject. So it's called Stomp the Stigma, and it's about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a family, Bob Travis, his wife Marla, their son took his own life in 2014. And in the depth of unimaginable grief, they started this golf tournament to raise awareness, raise money, to open the conversation, to discuss something that's always been a taboo subject. And so it was a terrific. And you knew some of the organizers, right? Like,
yeah, Jeremy Taggart is a big part of it.
Jeremy Taggart and Ian Leggett were the co-chairs of it.
Yep.
Rod Black was the MC. And I played golf, actually, with Bob Travis and his son. And it was and talking about their late son, Kyle. And it's a very difficult subject, but it's really important and heart-wrenching at times. But great. And Jeff O'Neill was there. He looks in mid-season form.
Yeah, I haven't seen the O-Dog. This is what this happens
with
every
year. Gary Roberts.
Every year. See, that's the contrast of all contrasts.
They look like the number 10. Like standing beside each other, they look like the number 10.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
He'll hate you for that comment.
He'll get over it.
Although I make comments like that about him all the time. And
he doesn't seem to dislike. He actually had nice things to say about you.
I love the O-Dog.
He said nice things about
you. He's my guy.
He said
I miss both of them. Him and Noodles.
Oh, would you like me to leave?
I love that you're here. I'm not saying that.
It's the age thing now. It's
I'm just pointing out. But because this is what happens every year. O will come back, and he'll start complaining right off the hop that we never got together over the course of the summer. But they are so set in their ways as hockey players. Like, growing up as a hockey player myself, playing whatever level and getting to junior or whatever, you always had two separate social lives,
yeah,
right? You had your hockey team life,
yeah,
that from like September through April or May or whatever, you were really connected with them, and then you leave for the summer and you wouldn't see them again, right, until like the end of August. And O lived that out professionally, and so did Noodles. And I think he's applied it to this gig because he leaves on like July 1st, and I know I'm not going to see him again.
Did you hear from him? Did you text it?
We'll call each other from time to time.
Send him a text right now. Send him a text right now and say, Gord took a shot at you, and see if he
should reply. We try to get him on? Because last summer he didn't come on once.
Really?
He and this is another thing. Like, leading up to July 1, he's always like, yeah,
Tyler,
call me in the summer.
Get O-Dog on.
I'll text him and see if we can get him on. I'll bet you he doesn't answer the text until after 7 p.m.
You know, I won a bet last week with Scott MacArthur. Huh?
What was that?
We had a bet on a football game. And he had to buy pizza. I'm on a bit of a roll in this show.
We can bet.
Gambling.
I got some insider trading here, though. It's my phone. I kind of know
Tyler, did you text him?
All right, Tyler can do it if you want.
Tyler, I bet you Tyler doesn't have O-Dog's number.
I was going to say.
If our producer didn't have O-Dog's number.
And I hate to admit this, but I would guess he'll probably get who dis in return. Like, Tyler will text him and be like, hey, can you come on? And I will be like, who is this?
Should I text him?
Yeah, okay, you go ahead. Say, I'm on today with Hayes. Hayes is pointing out a fact that you haven't been on all summer. And last summer you didn't call in once. Why don't you call in and we'll see what's going on?
Okay.
Okay, we'll do that. All right, so we'll see if O comes on. I'm assuming it won't happen. I don't know what he's doing right now, but I think he'll either flush your text or get back to you after 7 p.m.
I don't have his number anymore.
Okay.
Hang on, what happened? I have his email, not his number.
Well, email works too. He's on his phone all the time.
True, he is.
He'll get it. Okay. It's just a matter of whether or not he acknowledges it.
I'm going to go old school here and send an email.
Okay. So you send him an email. We'll see if we can get him on.
Can I give his email address out over the air? That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Well, did you see when Jimmy Butler, although he did it on purpose, like, right, when he got dealt from Chicago to Minnie, he came out and said, if anyone has a problem with me or you want to pose a question to me, here's my phone number. And I thought at first he was doing it just to be a hero or kind of goofing around, or immediately he would change his number. He didn't. He was like taking calls from people. And now with iPhones and everything, people were FaceTiming him constantly. And he was posting Instagram photos of him actually accepting FaceTimes.
Well, do you remember the documentary about the making of the 2010 Olympic hockey team for Canada? And they had this scene where they had a list, and the guys were calling the players to tell them they were on the team. And so the cameraman was shooting over the shoulder, and viewers like could freeze frame that, and it got like Sidney Crosby's cell number and like all these guys.
Is that right?
Players all changed their numbers, yeah.
I guess you have to every 4 or 5 months. Like Brady said that. Remember during the Deflategate stuff, he came out. Now, that may have been a part of his case.
He was throwing his... Funny, when he changed his number, he was actually throwing the telephone out.
Right.
So that's a different thing.
Into the ocean. But he said every 6 months, I'm changing my number.
Really?
Yeah.
Most of the guys I know that are high profile, they have the same number.
Really?
Yeah. Most of the guys, they've had the same number for years.
I guess it depends on how paranoid you are, what you think you're hiding. If you're not living some crazy double life, what does it matter?
Well, they don't give it out that easily, but I mean, although I have it.
But that's the thing, though. If someone gets it, a producer gets it, an intern somehow finds it,
right.
If it's online, then it's going from one show to the next show to the next show, and you never know how
right.
it's going to get
out. The one thing I don't do is give someone else's number out, right? Like they always, like weasels like Tyler, right? Hey, how about just give me Gretzky's number and I'll call him?
He's dying for your numbers. He would pay a lot of money for your Rolodex.
Would he?
I think he probably would. I would. If it benefits the show, I'll pay you a pretty penny for all those numbers.
I don't know how it's that good.
You just said you got 99 in there. Do you have 87?
Yeah.
That's all you need to know. That works right there. 99 and 87. We'll take it.
We'll FaceTime them.
Yeah, on the air. We could make that work.
Do you remember it was a great idea, actually. On July 1st, we had the guys FaceTiming in. Mm-hmm. Some of them were poor cameramen. Some of them did not have good framing. Like Carl Alsner popped up. His face was like, you know, if you had a big screen, like it was a giant Carl Alsner had invaded your living room. Like he kind of framed himself like from the eyebrows.
Which you wouldn't expect for someone like in their 20s, a millennial who has probably been attached to their phone for
My daughter always rips me for my FaceTime framing.
Yeah, see, I hate to stereotype and hear it with ageism again, but older people, generally speaking, are not great when it comes to focusing on the FaceTime picture.
Dude, I'm 52.
I understand.
I'm not in retirement home.
You outed yourself. You just said your daughter is the one who is claiming you're not very good at it.
She's a smart aleck 12-year-old.
Yeah, but I'll bet you she knows a way around an iPhone more than you do. Probably way more than I do.
Maybe. Well, Snapchat and all that.
Oh, man. My niece is 14, I think, 15, and she is...
You know how old your niece is?
I can't believe I outed myself, but I screw it up all the time.
Is this John's daughter?
No, it's my sister's daughter.
Your sister's daughter.
And she's in grade 9, just wrapped up grade 9. So that would be 15, I believe. 15.
14 or 15.
14 or 15.
God.
Anyway, she just got back from camp, and it was a big thing that she left her phone at home.
Yeah.
And then I guess she was claiming she's going to try to go on as long as she can once she got back without actually posting anything on social media. And that lasted about 24 hours.
Right. How long do you go?
I'm on all the time.
I admit
to this all the time. I am fully connected to my phone. It's not a good thing. It's not healthy.
But
I know it's not healthy.
You're a tweeting maniac.
I tweet. Although I've slowed down a lot. I used to be one of those guys who would tweet out. Like, I'd be watching a random game on, like, an NFL Sunday, and I'd just write, that's a fumble. And then, like, now I would go back and look at that and be like, why would I tweet that? Because how does anyone else know which 1 p.m. game I'm even talking about?
You know what drives me nuts is you follow someone to get, like, some news on a team, and they during the game, so-and-so hit the post. Good chance for so-and-so. Like, they're tweeting out every event that happened in the game.
Right.
I'm watching the game, or I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not, I don't really need...
Like, the minutiae of the game.
Yeah. Now, here's a question for you, for social media. Do you respond to people who tweet back to you?
I used to a lot. I tried to. I don't as much
anymore.
Do
you read them?
Not all the time, no. And that's not like an arrogance thing or, hey, I've got this, that, or the other. It's just
everyone has a different approach. So mine are blocked. So I can't see them. The only people I can see tweeting back to me are people that I follow.
Is that right?
And I only follow 25 people. Or
so why do you do that?
I just think that for a while there, it just turned into like the, you know, you get this sense of negativity.
It
like
gets nasty on Twitter.
The sewer of negativity. It's like, I don't need to be involved in that, right?
It gets nasty.
And if you have a comment to make to me, there's lots of ways to get in touch with me, right? If you put some effort into it. But just because Angry Ernie in Thunder Bay has an internet connection doesn't give him a free shot to say, you know, hey, old man, you should retire or whatever.
Which Toronto sports figure do you think would have the darkest mentions on Twitter if he had a Twitter account?
Well, talking about athletes or just generally?
Generally.
I would guess that Steve Simmons the last 24 hours.
Yeah, Steve gets it pretty bad. Now, Steve will respond, and I think Steve reads, and I don't get the impression like he's affected by it. I can't speak for him. I don't know. Yeah. But the Kessel Instagram post with the hot dogs and the cup.
So that would be
pretty good work by Phil.
Yeah. So that I would say I think a lot of media figures do for sure. If you're a controversial media figure, you're going to get a lot. And it's not that I'm opposed to, like, there are times when I'll open it up. I just for my clarity of mind, I just prefer, you know, I know when I've done a good job or a bad job, and I'm just not really.
Right, which I think is healthy.
Yeah.
I think that's smart. Because you can go down that rabbit hole, man, and it can get dark.
I can tell you this, Hockey Canada, every year now advises the players for the World Junior, like, turn your social media off, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of it,
mm-hmm.
because you'll think the world hates you. The anonymity of it, right, is the thing, right? Because we put our names and our faces out there. We put our name out there in our face, so now some guy with a picture of, you know,
an egg.
Or Alexei Marchenko, you know, just for the, you know, can now come back and say, you know, mm-hmm. you're a bumbling idiot, you stooge. Okay. I did like mean tweets, though. I think it was Fallon did that.
Yeah.
Like Robert De Niro reading mean, like, people things that people tweeted at him.
I think it was it Fallon? Or I think it was Kimmel that maybe did that.
Oh, maybe it was Jimmy. No, you're right.
I think it was Kimmel.
Right. Sorry, give credit where credit is due.
Yeah, they do a really good job of it. And most of the celebrities are willing to go through with it. Some of them, you read them or you hear them read them and you're like, whoa, those really are actually potentially touching a nerve.
But there was also I think the other thing too is, and there's a darker side to it. And there was a thing where female reporters read some of the things that were tweeted at them.
I remember seeing that. I think Sarah Spain was involved in that.
Yeah, and it's disturbing, and it's mm-hmm. and it's vicious. And I think it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. Obviously, vicious is vicious. But I think there's an element towards women that is really, really distasteful. And so my preference is just, you know, not to swim in those waters.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. I mean, you don't need Twitter. Like, especially your job, you need to be informed on who is playing that night, what's going on around the league. I come at it a little bit differently. Interaction is something that I try to uphold. You know, I'll read tweets when we're on the air. You know, if someone mm-hmm. tweets something in, like, I'll ask people if you want to get involved in this, which Toronto sports figure do you think would have the most difficult time reading their mentions? Because right now, like, for the first time probably in my lifetime, there isn't a Maple Leaf I can think of, which is a true rarity. I can't think of anyone currently affiliated with the Maple Leafs where it would be like, ooh, I wouldn't open that up right now.
Yeah.
They almost have a 100% approval rating.
Like the Phaneuf, McCabe,
nothing.
Kessel.
Phil, Burke, Wilson. You go down, Ferguson Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, throughout my lifetime, for the most part anyway, there was always at least one figure on the team where you'd be like, that's getting dicey.
When I started in the mid-80s, the early to mid-80s, I was at CBC in Edmonton. And back then, you used to call in and leave a message on the audience relations voicemail machine. And someone would transcribe them and post those things the next day. And there was a bulletin board right outside the sports office. And I looked like I was a kid, right? And I'd walk into the office, and every day, right outside my office, on the bulletin board, be like, Gord Miller looks like he's 10 years old. Be like, oh, great.
But at least you probably could acknowledge it. You're like, yeah, I'm young. You were 23. I mean,
I was 17.
You were 17. Okay.
I started in 83. I was 7. I just turned 8. I turned
18. So you were young.
Yeah, I was young.
You were a kid.
But when you're a kid, you know, and it's like, wow. And then there's a newspaper writer who you made fun of me and stuff. And you get used to it. The criticism doesn't bother me. Like, people can be critical. That doesn't bother me a bit. What bothers me is the unequal relationship where people behind the veil of anonymity, right, are able to say whatever they think they can say whatever they want. And mm-hmm. I think in a larger sense, it's really hurt the discourse. I think it's really hurt a rational discussion because it just turns into I'm right and you're an idiot.
Well, truthfully, I think they also 90-95% of Twitter, using Twitter as the apparatus that we're talking about, is generally, I wouldn't say nice, wouldn't necessarily say positive, but even keeled. But that 5-10% that is completely off the radar,
just angry people,
is the loudest, right? Is the right. And I think it gets too much attention, quite frankly. I think you can get 100, in other words, you can get 100 tweets, and 95 of them are you're doing a great job, or I like this, that, or the other. I think it's human nature to focus on the other five.
But that could be dangerous.
The five that say you suck.
That's
only five.
That
could
be dangerous, too, to listen to all the people saying how great you are. But I remember,
of course,
you know, Ted Williams, when he came back from the Korean War, you know, got a huge ovation at Fenway Park, but heard like five hecklers giving him the business. You know, there were 32,000 people there, and he heard the five. It just depends on your personality. It totally depends on your personality. Ray Ferraro loves to give it to people. Bob McKenzie used to be the best. So what most people have with their Twitter accounts, because they don't have a lot of followers, is they get an email mention when they get a tweet back, right? Mm-hmm. When someone mentions them. You know, so two or three times a day, they might get an email. So some guy will take a shot at Bobby Mack, and Bobby will retweet their tweet. And now, you know, Bob's got over 1 million followers, so like 50,000 people will say, hey, you stooge, like, sit back down. And all of a sudden, this guy's email box, like, he's at work, and all of a sudden, like,
the notification.
The notification, like, all of a sudden, his email box explodes. Like, some guy yesterday tweeted about Donald Trump. So Trump said, try to walk back not condemning the whites.
Charlottesville stuff.
He said, well, it figures he's a fascist. And so Trump inadvertently retweeted it. Like, didn't mean to or whatever. And all of a sudden, this guy got retweeted like 1 million times.
I saw that.
Right? And so he said, I retire from Twitter because I'll never top this retweet. Mm-hmm. Right?
So, but isn't that typical Trump, though? It's never actually his fault. Why couldn't you just come out and be like, my bad?
Yeah. How about you're sitting, you know, you're working in an insurance office, and all of a sudden, like, you've got 52,000 emails in your inbox.
Well, I mean, that is the Twitter account where if you're connected in any which way, the whole world is going to know about it.
Right.
If Trump is tweeting and your handle's involved, look out.
Yeah. So Bob McKenzie has the great, but Ray Ferraro is very combative on Twitter, and I kind of chuckle at it. And
I love it.
He just, like, I'll wake up in the morning, and I'll check, you know, I'll check the news and check Twitter, and I'll be like, and the first thing I'll see is, hey, chum, get your ears cleaned. You didn't hear it right.
Oh, he can't wait.
I'm like, oh, here we go.
He can't wait to get after
here
it.
Here we go.
Someone texting and saying, Jose Bautista's mentions must be difficult right now. Going from a legend to what he is now has to be difficult on the ego. I don't know, man. I mean, listen, the stats are what they are. Those are facts. He may not want to read them if you're sending him his box line or a stat line every night.
I think people, he's still a beloved figure.
He's
here.
Bautista, man.
He's still, like, a beloved guy.
Exactly.
Here. I don't know that he's...
He hit the home run in the seventh inning of Game 5. He had 54 home runs as a Blue Jay.
Yeah.
Statistically, he's top 10 across the board. He's going to be on the level of excellence.
Yeah.
I don't think Bautista's worried about that. You know, as for the Jays, quite frankly, I think Shapiro and or Atkins are the guys that people are focused on, and they're going to be really focused on what they're going to do over the next 24 to 48 hours based on the news that came out about an hour ago that it sounds as if Marco Estrada has been claimed by someone off waivers.
So we should explain this, because I think we assume that everyone understands how this works. So they put him on waivers. He's been claimed. They now have 48 hours to either work out a deal with that team or pull him off waivers. If they pull him off waivers, he can't go back on.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what has happened is they must now work out a deal with the team that has claimed him. That is their only choice.
And there are rumors out there, again, nothing that is written in stone, that it was an American League East team. Now, if that's the case, I'm assuming it's the Yankees.
Here's what I'm wondering. We don't know how many claims went in.
Right. We don't, but... Ultimately, you only need to pinpoint the one team.
No, but what I'm saying is it might be someone trying to block another team.
Absolutely.
Right?
Knowing that the deal's not going to go down.
Right. So you're Baltimore, and you think the Yankees are going to put a claim in. So you put the claim in having no intention of making the deal. Now, if the Blue Jays let him walk, you take him.
Well, and John Heyman tweeting out Baseball Insider that he's hearing Jays have little interest in letting go of Estrada or trading him to a contender, as they figure they themselves may be a contender as well. And I take issue with that. I'm having a difficult time, and I've had a difficult time for months now, getting a read on whether or not Mark Shapiro, and he's the guy that's making these calls, he's been around the game for a long time. He's been a baseball exec for a long, long time. I find it hard to believe he really looks at this situation. And albeit they've been winning a lot more games recently, they won again last night.
Mm-hmm.
They're 3.5 out of a second wild card spot, but they still have to hop over 7 teams over the course of about 40 games, that he really believes they're a contender. He really believes they can do any damage.
So the math looks good. Hey, 3.5 back, 6 teams between you.
That's what matters.
Even though the bar is low, like the Angels have the second wild card right now, they're on pace for like 84 wins.
Well, and
it's a low number, but the problem is they all play each other. The Blue Jays, to get to 84 wins, just say 84 is the number. To get there, the Jays have to go, what, 27-17, right? So that's hard enough to do.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they've got to hope that whenever Minnesota plays Kansas City or Seattle plays Texas or Baltimore plays Tampa, that they split. They can't have one team take 7 out of 8.
Right.
They can't have one team take 5 out of 6. They can't.
Well, and they've got a ton of games left against the Yankees, against the Red Sox, against the Rays, teams that, again, they have historically not played very well against.
So teams that
are absolutely better than them.
Right. So I mean, they're not stupid, but they're also in a business.
But that's my point, Gord, is that how much of this message being sent through Heyman is, we love the fact that there are some ticket-buying fans who are looking at the 3.5 as opposed to looking at the 7 teams they got to hop over. How much of...
Yeah, you're right. It's not 6, it's 7, because you got to catch the team.
You got to get the team that's actually in the second spot.
Yeah.
Right? So you got to hop over 7 teams over the course of about 40, 42, 43 games. How much of what is coming out of the Rogers Center is, we love that we're getting 40 grand, and we got a lot of games left against the Yankees and the Sox and the Rays and whoever else is coming through town, and we got some more tickets to sell. How much of it, and I know that's a cynical viewpoint, but I can't get away from it.
Because from a
baseball personnel standpoint, you make this move if there's a move to be made. You don't give them away for free.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that. But if they can get something of value, you trade them for 75 cents on the dollar, you got to make that move. You made that decision a couple of weeks ago.
What about signing them?
Do that at the end of the year. Let him come back. He loves Toronto by all accounts. Get some value now, and then sign him in December.
But that's the best of both worlds for me. If he catches fire down the stretch for a contender, now you're bidding against 30 teams. Right now, you're the only team that can sign him.
I don't know if he... the thing is, Estrada might be thinking, you know what, I need to pitch out the rest of the season so that I can get my value back to a position where I might have some leverage
in a negotiation. Or he might think, you know what, maybe it's not going to be as good out there in free agency as I want it to be. I'll take what's on the table now.
All right, let's come back and we'll get more into that. Again, reports out there, Estrada has been claimed by someone off waivers. Some reports or rumors indicating maybe it's a team in the American League East. How would the fans really react if he got flipped? And he's scheduled to be on the mound tonight. Should he be pitching if they're really working towards a deal? We'll touch on that next. All right, Gord Ash will join us in about a half an hour. Steve Phillips in the 6 p.m.
Yeah.
hour.
I have a weird thing for Steve. I'm going to ask Steve Phillips a question. I like Steve Phillips' work a lot. I think he's terrific. Here's the thing I don't get about Estrada. Is re-signing him now not an option? Like, if you...
It is. They can. I can't imagine either side is thinking that right now.
Why not?
Because if you're Estrada, you've had 3 quality starts in a row.
Yeah.
Your numbers are still very bloated.
Okay.
What kind of leverage do you have?
What kind of leverage you have if you go to a contender and lose 4 of your last 5 starts?
Well, it can go both ways.
Right.
Yeah, of course it can. But I get the impression, like most athletes, are like, I'll bank on myself turning this thing around. And if he can chip away at his ERA, get it to around 4, maybe under 4, maybe he gets traded to a contender, has another big start or two in playoff baseball, which he has been prone to do over the past 2 years, and all of a sudden those first 20 starts get forgotten pretty quickly.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm Estrada, I might be thinking, I got to play this out. If I'm the Jays, I don't even know what you would be offering him, because you have to lowball him based on his numbers this year. And if you're going to lowball him, what's the point of having the conversation? Because chances are he's going to say, you know what, forget it.
Give him some term, though. You can give him what other people might not, which is term.
What if they don't think he's got it, though? I mean, again, I'm looking at his game logs here. His past three starts, he's pitched really well. He's gone 7 innings, 3 starts in a row, given up 4 collective earned runs over those 3 starts, about a 3-to-1 K to walk rate. Like, those are really quality numbers. Yeah. But how about the starts before that, where he was an unmitigated disaster?
Okay, and so what I'm saying is, you have some leverage, use it. If you're the Jays, I get what you're saying, like, let him walk and bring him back in December, but then you're bidding against 30 other teams.
All right, we'll get into that. We'll touch on whether or not he should be starting tonight, considering the fact that he has been claimed off waivers. We'll touch on that in 2 minutes. All right, so reports out there that Marco Estrada has been claimed off waivers. We don't know which team yet. Potentially a team in the American League East. Should point out that John Heyman, MLB Insider, also reporting that what he's hearing is Jays don't have much interest in actually trading him to a contender because they believe that they may be contenders. I like that. The operative word being may.
May.
We may be contenders at some point over the final month and a half, so I don't know if we want to take your deal.
Hey, you know who else is out there? Giancarlo Stanton apparently is on waivers.
I think he's cleared. Anyone want to take on $295 million?
What's he got left?
I think he's got 10 years at $295.
He signed a 13-year, $325 million deal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say some of it's front-end loaded. Let's assume part of that contract's front-end loaded.
What he's playing right now is worth every penny. Every penny, Gord. And I know,
relatively speaking,
it's crazy to wrap your head around numbers like that.
But you're right. Like, and here's the thing about it. And I know people get upset about sports salaries. First of all, when you work for someone else, you're never overpaid. You are paid what they agreed to pay you.
That's right.
So, for example, this is our second Taylor Swift mention in the first hour, by the way. So Taylor Swift comes to Toronto, plays Rogers Centre or the Air Canada Center. She hauls out $5 million bucks a night. No one disputes that. She's puts herself out there. She gets to do it, right? If you think you can play baseball as well as Giancarlo Stanton, get out there and try it. But someone with a lot of money decided that they could do that, and they weren't coerced into it. They made that decision. So
takes two to tango.
Yeah. So I careful with both sides. It's a touchy subject these days. But it's fascinating to me that. Like, here's a great example. Barry Bonds signs with San Francisco, signed a $7 million a year deal with the Giants. This is like 96, mm-hmm. right? They sold $10 million worth of tickets in the next 3 weeks.
Because of what he represents.
Hope, right? And
sure superstardom. Enough,
they get to the postseason, you know, and all the other stuff about Bonds notwithstanding. The fact was he was the star of the game at that point. And they got him. So if you want to give, now, you know, was it smart to give Giancarlo Stanton that kind of money? Probably not. Given where they are.
Well, and the team is so bad. That's the problem.
Right. So, I mean, if you think he's the guy that's going to put you over the top, then do it.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting, though, that they're thinking of trading him before new ownership officially takes over. Like, well, if you're that prospective owner, wouldn't you be saying, no, wait a minute, I'll make that call?
Well, actually, you wonder if they're not clearing the decks for the new owners. I wonder if the new owners maybe ask.
It's a terrible sports market. Miami's awful. It's terrible. Well, it's even worse in the summer for baseball.
It's an odd sports market. Because it's
transplanted people. And
yeah, and you've got so many teams so spread out. Mm-hmm. You've got a college, you know, you've got a major, University of Miami's there.
Florida's a big college state too, like college state, football, basketball.
But very rarely are games sold out there. That's the amazing thing. Is very rarely, even when they're good teams, like the Heat. Even when the Heat had the big three, they weren't always sold out.
Oh, and people would show up at halftime. You know, they'd leave after the third quarter.
Everyone else
quarter.
Is like that? L.A.
Yeah, those are the two towns.
I believe the L.A. Kings in 88-89 were the first Los Angeles team to sell out every home game.
Because of Gretzky?
I think so, yeah. And they were good. Might have been the 89-90 year, Gretzky's second year there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were because the Lakers didn't. Like
which is wild because that was Showtime.
Oh yeah, you could walk up to the old Forum and get a ticket to a Laker game, no problem.
Well, there is a connection with Stanton and Bonds right now because based on the way he's hitting, he's got 22 home runs in his past 34 games. He's now on pace for 60, but when you actually condense it to what he's done recently, he's on pace to blow past that. But is that the number that you focus on?
Yeah, 60 is still the number.
That's the one for you. It's not 72.
No, for me, the number is still 60. That's still...
I think that's the case for me just because that's how I was introduced to the game. Maris had 61, Ruth had 60, and you know, McGuire and Sosa and Bonds blowing past it at the time was so significant, but now it's been tarnished because of the PEDs and all that kind of stuff. Right. But and because that's what I was introduced to was 60 meaning something, it still means a lot.
The sad thing for Bonds is that steroids didn't make him a good baseball player. They made him a better baseball player. He hit for more power. But he was a tremendous baseball player. And and his ability to hit wasn't because of steroids.
No, he was a Hall of Famer leaving Pittsburgh.
Great hitter.
The same thing with Clemens.
Yeah.
Same thing with A-Rod.
Yeah. But in Stanton's case, who would take that contract?
Well, realistically.
Could you imagine Wrigley Field? Honestly, fans could get hurt in the outfield.
Now, it's not a matter of whether or not they'd actually do it, but when you're talking 10 years, $295 million, there's four or five teams that would realistically entertain this idea. When you look over...
The Mets?
I don't even think the Mets. I don't. I think it's Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, Dodgers, Giants. I think the Giants are the team to look at. They are having a historically bad season right now.
Based on what people thought.
Based on what they've been over the past decade. They've won three World Series over the past 7 or 8 years. They're just an incredible baseball town. The park is brilliant.
Oh, have you been?
Yes. It's my favorite spot going.
Honestly, it's unbelievable.
And they've got Buster Posey. They've got Bumgarner. But they've been a team that's always won without like those super, superstar players.
Right.
You know? And put Stanton at AT&T, I could see them doing it. They would have the money. They would have the backing. It would hopefully, from their standpoint, trigger the idea of them moving back up the standings next year. They got to keep competing with the Dodgers.
Right. By the way, Stanton's contract is heavily backloaded.
Well, exactly. Like he's 2 or 3 years into the books. They've only spent like $20-30 million
because he's got a 6-year opt out. So the way to keep him is if he opts out, he's leaving a lot of money on the table.
And they were probably thinking, you know what, we're going to unload him anyway. Let's sign him as the Miami Marlins. We're not going to keep him. We're going to trade him.
Right.
That wouldn't shock me at all if that was a part of the conversation. We'll get back into the Estrada stuff. He's scheduled to pitch tonight. He's been claimed off waivers. Should he be pitching tonight if they're really thinking of dealing him? We'll catch up with Gord Ash in about 20 minutes. Steve Phillips later in the afternoon. The toxicology report released yesterday from Tiger Woods and his DUI. Lots of prescription drugs. Marijuana, does it change the story when we look back on it? THC.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
Legal now. Legal now in Florida.
Okay, we'll get into that story as well later in the afternoon. Gord Miller's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.
It's time for a Sweet 16 battle in TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Oh, what a hit that was!
This is the worst one for sure.
All right, so this is day two for me doing this, Gore, but you've been on the past couple weeks with Scotty Max, so you've been doing the Sound Wars?
Yeah.
So you know the way this works.
Yeah.
Okay, well, out of the gate, I have to announce today's winner.
Okay.
The Sound Wars battle between Phil Kessel's Not Good, right? Or it's Not Good A.
Not Good. Not Good Right, wasn't it?
We'll see.
Okay.
Or Bozak's OT winner, and the winner was...
How's your breath? It's not good, eh?
No, I meant in terms of conditioning.
Oh.
Okay. See, I think maybe the giggle's the best part of that anyway. Like, it's not good, eh, is outstanding.
It was A, too.
It was A. The Phil giggle's the best. All right, so the best sound bites are down to the Sweet 16, and you get to decide which ones survive this TSN 1050 Sound War, brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. It's on-air moment seed number 3 versus seed number 11. All right, let's hear seed number 3.
You were a month away from having to go messaging.
We talked about this last time. I think it looks pretty thick right now.
You have a river running through the side that's cutting in deep.
You're a month away from gastric bypass surgery.
All right, so I don't know how that seed number three. That was at the draft when McCabe came by and just started carving up O. O was carving up his hair at first, and then he said, "You're a month away from gastric bypass surgery." So that's number three. Here is seed number 11.
Chatting with Austin Matthews.
I don't know if you know what I look like, but I'm a little stockier than you guys. Where do you recommend I get some jorts?
I don't know if I'd recommend it for a frame type like yours, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So I got to go to Big and Tall? Is that where I got to get my jorts?
Just
Big
stick
and Tall,
to the
I think that's the store.
There's a few
get
of those.
This guy off the phone.
All right, so that was about an hour before the McCabe comment. So the weight of the O-Dog was brought up multiple times when we were in Chicago. By guests.
I don't know. It's,
go pick your moment, man. It's your call. Go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite on-air moment. Seed number three, gastric bypass surgery, or seed number 11, Matthews on O-Dog's jorts. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle. Right here on TSN 1050. Sound Wars, again, is brought to you by our good friends down at Old Tomorrow Beer and Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager at select Loblaw grocery stores. Hour two up next. Gord Ash will join us. We'll get you an update on what John Gibbons had to say about Marco Estrada. We'll get to that next.